Welcome. My name is Dr. Kenneth Sherman, Professor of Medicine at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine. This is an IAS USA module on the initial evaluation of persons with chronic hepatitis C infection. Today, I will be covering the following key points on the evaluation of patients with hepatitis C. These include key aspects of history and physical examination, the recommended laboratory studies after initial diagnosis, immunization for persons with chronic hepatitis C virus infection, and screening for other causes and contributors of liver disease. We will begin with key aspects of the history and physical examination. Among the first questions that need to be asked of a new patient is when they were diagnosed with hepatitis C and how the hepatitis C was diagnosed. When is often determined by examining the prior risk factors for infection with hepatitis C. These include injection drug use, which includes detailed information about when injection drug use was first started, how long it was continued, and whether or not the patient had rehabilitation following discontinuation of injection drug use. One should inquire about use of nasal cocaine, which has been implicated as a possible factor in transmission of hep C, and certainly as a surrogate for injection drug use that is not otherwise acknowledged by the patient. Blood transfusions prior to 1992, when screening was initiated in the United States, represent a risk for infection as well. Data regarding tattoos and body piercing are controversial. This may represent surrogates of prior infection, though in some cases, use of non-sterile tattoo devices, needles, and also devices for body piercing can represent a potential source of infection. One should also inquire about sexual exposures. Sexual exposures include determination of whether there was both heterosexual as well as homosexual exposure. Men who have sex with men are at increased risk of acquisition of hepatitis C. In addition, one should inquire about potential family exposures. Children of infected mothers are clearly at some risk of having infection with hep C around the time of birth. It is possible that exposures within a household could also be significant, though the risk of transmission in this setting is indeed less likely. One should also review the workup to date. Often patients come to you for evaluation following initial identification of hepatitis C antibody positivity. This may have been accompanied by varying degrees of evaluation by the initial healthcare provider that identified hepatitis C in the patient. Comorbidity should also be assessed. These include other known liver diseases, hepatotoxic drugs, and alcohol. One should obtain cardiac history, pulmonary history, history of rheumatologic disorders, as well as neurologic diseases. Finally, one should obtain a clear psychiatric history, including severity, past hospitalizations, and current therapies. Family history of liver disease is also important. The presence of liver disease in other family members may indicate the presence of a genetic or viral liver disease in family members that could involve the individual sitting before you and the progression of their liver disease. Lastly, one must review the current medications the patient is on. This has become particularly important in recent years with the advent of the use of direct-acting agents that that have a higher risk of drug-drug interactions than previous generations of therapy. In some cases, it may be necessary to modify or eliminate elements of the current drug therapy the patient is on before initiating therapy for hepatitis C. On the next slide, we will continue with issues related to physical exam targeted at a patient with liver disease. There are certain elements that bear particular scrutiny. When one examines the eyes, you should be looking for evidence of scleral icterus. A fundoscopic exam should be performed, and you should be looking for evidence of retinopathy, as the presence of retinopathy may represent a relative contraindication to the use of interferon-based therapies. Thyroid disease is common in patients with hepatitis C. While the underlying pathophysiology of this remains unclear, it is incumbent upon the healthcare provider to determine if there is evidence of thyroid enlargement or nodularity. Evaluation of the skin will reveal whether there is presence of jaundice. One can also examine the patient's hands for evidence of palmar erythema. While palmar erythema does not necessarily mean that the patient has chronic liver disease, in a man, it should raise the suspicion that indeed more advanced liver disease is present. However, palmar erythema is driven by high levels of estrogen and may be more common in women without evidence of liver disease. One should also evaluate for the presence of spider angiomata. Small spots with spider-like protrusions coming out of them on often the trunk and neck that when pressed in the center will blanch and then refill upon removal from the center outwards. On the pulmonary exam, particular focus should be given to listening for breath sounds on the right side. Right hydrothorax is a frequent complication of the presence of ascites, where breaks in the diaphragm lead to fluid from the abdomen being drawn into the right lung space, and one can determine this by hearing dullness to percussion and decreased breath sounds at the right base. One should evaluate the patient's heart for rate and rhythm, as well as presence of murmurs. Cardiovascular abnormalities, again, could represent a relative contraindication to therapy. The evaluation of the abdomen is obviously critical in a patient with liver disease. Percussion and palpation are both used to assess liver size and liver texture. Patients with more advanced liver disease typically will have a small shrunken liver, sometimes with enlargement of the left lobe of the liver. The spleen size should also be determined. In a thin person, even those without liver disease, the tip of the spleen can often be palpated. In other people who may be larger in overall body habitus, the detection of the spleen would indicate splenomegaly, which is associated with portal hypertension. One should also palpate across the abdomen, evaluating for the presence of other masses. Visual evaluation of the abdomen will determine whether a caput is present. A caput represents revascularization of the umbilical vein, with then increased enlargement of blood vessels in the skin, returning portal blood to the systemic circulation via the umbilical vein and across the surface vessels of the abdomen. This indicates the presence of significant portal hypertension. Finally, one should assess for ascites. This is performed by evaluation of the patient's abdomen for shifting dullness, and for evidence of a succussion splash. Presence of ascites indicates generally the presence of advanced liver disease. A neurologic exam should be performed, looking for evidence of neurologic symptoms overall, which could affect or limit treatment. with interferon-based therapies. In addition, one is evaluating for tremor and for asterixis. Asterixis is a flap that occurs in patients with advanced liver disease and is a marker of hepatic encephalopathy. Finally, one should evaluate the patient's overall psychiatric condition. This includes an evaluation of the patient's mood and affect. While the presence of depression does not necessarily represent an absolute contraindication to treatment, the treater should be aware that the presence of significant depression may in fact be worsened by the use of interferon-based therapies, and that prior treatment intervention with antidepressants may be needed before or during a course of therapy. All patients should be evaluated for suicidal ideation. A patient with suicidal ideation should be referred for professional psychiatric care prior to consideration of initiation of therapy. We'll now look at laboratory studies that one should obtain during the initial evaluation. All patients should have a hepatic profile, which typically consists of serum transaminases, ALT and AST, a bilirubin, an alkaline phosphatase, and an albumin. These provide some index of the degree of liver injury that is ongoing, as well as the overall functional status of the liver. A renal profile is also required. One should evaluate the patient's creatinine level. Elevated creatinines indicate the presence of renal dysfunction, which may require modification of DAAs and their use. All patients should also have a complete blood count with a differential. Many of the current therapies have elements of marrow suppression associated with their use. Patients that have exceedingly low white blood cell counts or platelet levels may have relative contraindications to therapy and may require other interventions, including the use of growth factors prior to initiation of therapy. Finally, because of the association between hepatitis C and thyroid disease, all patients should have a thyroid-stimulating hormone level obtained. An abnormal TSH should be followed up with a full thyroid profile to determine if intervention is needed by an endocrinologist before initiating therapy with interferon. There are also disease-related labs that should be obtained prior to consideration for therapy. An HCV RNA quantitative evaluation is important to obtain because it has both prognostic value and because it confirms the presence of a previously obtained ELISA-positive antibody that might have led to this evaluation. The HCV genotype is a determination of the class that the virus is in relative to its overall genetic structure. Genotype is important because current direct-acting agent therapies are genotype-dependent in their use. Approved therapies are only useful today for patients with genotype 1 disease, and alternative therapies without direct-acting agents are currently approved for patients with genotype 2 and 3. These are the most common genotypes present in the United States. Some hepatitis C experts would also obtain an IL-28B genotype. IL-28B is a host genetic marker that is a predictor of the likelihood of spontaneous clearance in an acutely infected hepatitis C patient and can serve as a marker of the likelihood of clearance with interferon-based therapies. The need for IL-28B has decreased among patients that have available the direct-acting agents because the increased efficacy of these agents has taken away some of the predictive value. Though, as indicated, many investigators and treaters still use this test to classify patients. There are two antibody tests that must be obtained before consideration of initiation of therapy. It is important that you determine whether hepatitis B surface antibody is present and whether the patient has had prior exposure or vaccination for hepatitis A by obtaining an anti-hepatitis A antibody IgG test. Finally, in patients with a chronic liver disease, it is important to obtain a baseline study to evaluate for hepatocellular carcinoma. This can be performed generally by obtaining a baseline level of alpha-fetoprotein and a baseline ultrasound. These tests will determine the likelihood that the patient has a possible hepatocellular carcinoma before one even would initiate therapy. Many investigators would skip the alpha-fetoprotein and just use a baseline ultrasound in their patients. It is important to note that only patients at high risk of developing a liver cancer or having a liver cancer are those with advanced liver disease. On the next slide, we will talk about the need to determine whether advanced fibrosis or cirrhosis is present and how this is done. Liver biopsy is the historical standard for evaluation of patients' level of hepatic fibrosis and determination of the presence of fibrosis. In the modern era, with the use of direct-acting agents, the degree of fibrosis is less important than the simple determination of whether cirrhosis is present or not. A liver biopsy is an invasive procedure that can be somewhat expensive to obtain and does carry risk for patients in terms of complications related to the procedure. Approximately 1 in 1,000 patients to 1 in 10,000 patients will have a serious complication associated with performance of a liver biopsy. Non-invasive markers are available. These are divided into two primary categories or groups: proprietary indices, such as FibroSure, which consist of a grouping of tests tied to a mathematical algorithm that provides a score ranging from 0 to 1 that indicates the likely association with a degree of fibrosis present in a patient. There are also non-proprietary indices available, including the AST to platelet ratio index and the Fib4 index. These do not require the use of exotic tests and can be determined by using tests commonly available to the clinician. While these tests are not as accurate as a liver biopsy, they are quite good overall in determining whether or not cirrhosis is indeed present. The third way of determining whether or not advanced fibrosis or cirrhosis is present involves the use of elastography, which provides a measure of the relative stiffness of the liver. Stiffness of the liver is then tied to the degree of fibrosis that is present. There are two main ways this is done. Using acoustic methods, one can send a sound wave into the liver, and the stiffness affects the receipt, much like sonar, of that signal back. There are also magnetic resonance imaging techniques available. Both of these methodologies are now approved for use in the United States, though their availability may be limited at this time. On the next slide, we discuss what happens when advanced fibrosis or cirrhosis is present or suspected. For those patients, one must consider the possibility that the patient has portal hypertension and associated complications of portal hypertension that require evaluation. For these patients, one needs to obtain an EGD, or esophagogastroduodenoscopy to evaluate the patient for esophageal and gastric varices. The presence of esophageal varices may require additional treatment and intervention with beta blockers or the use of band techniques to eradicate those varices. At that stage of liver disease, all patients should have regular ultrasound to evaluate for hepatocellular carcinoma. Ultrasounds in the cirrhotic patient are typically performed at 6-month intervals. Finally, all patients should have a calculation performed for the model of end-stage liver disease or MELD score. MELD score calculators are available on smartphones and can be obtained on the internet. The calculation of MELD provides an indication of when a patient should be referred to a transplant center. In general, consultation of a transplant center should be sought when the MELD score is equal to or greater than 10. One should also refer patients to a transplant center if there is any history of bleeding varices, any presence of ascites, even if those ascites have resolved with diuretic therapy, and any evidence of the presence of hepatic encephalopathy. Next, we will look at immunizations for persons with chronic hepatitis C. As indicated before, there are two main preventable hepatitis viruses that one wants to ensure that appropriate vaccination is indeed performed for. For hepatitis A, one should test for the hepatitis A antibody IgG. If the antibody is not present, then the patient should be either vaccinated twice, 6 months apart, or use a combination vaccine. This is a hepatitis A, hepatitis B combined vaccine, which requires a 3-dose series over a 6-month period. Similarly, one should test for hepatitis B surface antibody. The typical vaccination series is a 3-shot series at time points of 0, 1 month, and 6 months. A combination vaccine with hepatitis A can be used for patients that require both vaccines. For immunosuppressed patients, such as those with HIV or those who are on renal dialysis, one should consider the use of a double-dose vaccine series for hepatitis B. Next, we will talk about screening for other causes and contributors of liver disease. The evaluation of other diseases in the patient with hepatitis C is optional, but is recommended if the patient is thought to have advanced fibrosis or cirrhosis. A number of important tests are available to help determine if comorbid liver diseases are present. Comorbid liver diseases can lead to accelerated rates of hepatic fibrosis and hepatic decompensation. Some of these diseases are treatable, others are not, but again represent important prognostic information for that patient. The diseases that one often evaluates for in those with advanced liver disease include alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency, which is tested by evaluation of an alpha-1 antitrypsin level and an alpha-1 antitrypsin phenotype. Wilson disease, which is evaluated for initially by looking for low levels of ceruloplasmin. If low levels of ceruloplasmin are present, then a 24-hour urinary copper is next used to determine if indeed there is excess copper excretion, which is characteristic of this disease. Autoimmune liver diseases may also be present. There are antibodies that essentially represent epiphenomenon and are not necessarily the cause of the disease, but may be elevated in high titers in patients with these liver diseases. These include anti-nuclear antibody, anti-smooth muscle antibody, anti-mitochondrial antibody, and liver-kidney microsomal antibody type 1. For patients with high titers of these antibodies, One may consider the value of a liver biopsy in determining whether there are features of concurrent autoimmune disease in those patients. Genetic hemochromatosis is a disease of excess iron storage. The gene for this disease is present in approximately 7% of the population in a heterozygotic form, meaning that at least one gene allele is present from one parent. One screens for this using ferritin, though ferritin is an acute phase reactant, and a high ferritin in the setting of chronic hep C infection does not necessarily mean the patient has genetic hemochromatosis. One would next obtain an iron saturation. An iron saturation greater than 50% in men and 45% in women should suggest the need for further workup, including a liver biopsy with a quantitative iron determination and a genetic test for genetic hemochromatosis. A common disease in the United States is non-alcoholic fatty liver disease and non-alcoholic steatohepatitis. This disease cannot be definitively diagnosed without a liver biopsy. One clue as to the presence of this is the HOMA, or homeostasis model assessment, which requires a mathematical calculation based upon the patient's fasting insulin and fasting glucose level. In summary, there are key elements for the evaluation of a patient with hepatitis C. These include a detailed liver-focused history, a liver-directed physical examination, and an evaluation of laboratory tests that help stage liver disease and determine if comorbidities are present. We must not forget that it's important to try and prevent other liver diseases in patients with chronic hep C infection, and so evaluation for an appropriate vaccination of patients for hepatitis A and hepatitis B is indicated. Finally, one needs to determine if advanced fibrosis or cirrhosis may be present, and if they are, one should consider referral to a hepatologist at a transplant center and initiation of surveillance for varices and hepatocellular carcinoma.